turn to the book of Luke, chapter 7. We'll read the same verses that we read this morning. Luke, chapter 7, verses 36 through verse 50. And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. He went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meet. Behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment, and stood at his feet behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisees, which had bidden him, saw it, he spake within himself, saying, This man, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that toucheth him, for she is a sinner. Jesus answering said unto him, Simon, I have somewhat to say unto thee. And he saith, Master, say on. There was a certain creditor which had two debtors, the one owed 500 pence and the other 50. When they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him most? Simon answered and said, I suppose that he whom he forgave most. And he said unto him, Thou hast rightly judged. And he turned to the woman and said unto Simon, Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet. But she hath washed my feet with tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss. This woman, since the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with the oil thou didst thou anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. And he said unto her, Thy sins are forgiven. And they that sat at meat with him began to say within themselves, Who is this that forgiveth sins also? He said to the woman, Thy faith hath saved thee. Go in peace. A common error concerning this passage is to identify it with what is recorded by Matthew in Matthew chapter 26, verses 6 through 13. Recorded by Mark in Mark chapter 14 and John chapter 12. In fact, if you have a center column in your Bible, more than likely those verses appear next to this passage that we just read. But it's not the same miracle. It's not the same event. Though what is recorded here in Luke chapter 7 and what is recorded there in Matthew, Mark, and John have many similarities, they're not the same, even though many insist on making them the same. First of all, they both occurred in a different place. That which is recorded by Matthew, Mark, and John, we're told very plainly, occurred in Bethany. What is before us, you read there in Luke chapter 7, occurred in Capernaum. They also occurred at a different time, of course. The event recorded by Matthew, Mark, and John occurred just days before the crucifixion. And what we just read occurred long before that. Again, there are similarities in both events. The host is in both is a man by the name of Simon. In Matthew and Mark, he is called Simon the leper, obviously a man that Jesus had healed from leprosy. Here in Luke chapter 7, he's Simon the Pharisee, two different people. We also see the woman in both events has an alabaster box of ointment. And in both events, she empties that box and pours it upon Christ. And again, what Matthew, Mark, and John record, it's not the same event. And some people don't think that's important, but it is. And there are some differences in the event, but that the two events, but that's not our point. But in John chapter 12, in John's account of this different event, we read that the woman empties her spice, pours this ointment upon Christ. And John tells us, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Now, Luke is the only one of the gospel writers that records the event that is spoken of in our text. And we want to look at this text tonight with a different emphasis than we did this morning. We want to look at it with the emphasis upon worship and look at this as an example of worship. And I imagine that this woman, when she broke open this alabaster box of ointment, just as it happened in John 12, the fragrance of that ointment filled the room. And what it smelled like was worship. And that's what we want to speak upon this evening, the fragrance of worship. What Paul said in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 18, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. He's speaking of that which he had received from the Philippian church. But what he said there in Philippians 4 and verse 18 ought to be true of our worship. It ought to be a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing unto God. Sadly, today, the masses that make up professing Christianity have bought into many superficial ideas concerning worship. They've bought into these ideas to such a degree that what is called worship today is anything but worship. And we've preached on this before. There's very little worship going on in churches today. All through the Word of God, we see a biblical pattern of true worship. And I believe our text is an example of true worship. Worship, of course, is something that proceeds from the heart. It cannot be separated from the heart. Not only does it proceed from the heart, it proceeds from a heart that has been deeply affected by God. It is, of course, reverential awe of mind, soul, and body. It requires our whole being. It is a declaration of His worth. We declare that He is worthy. It is the reverential act of submission and homage to God. There is no worship outside of submission to the Lord. It is, of course, exalting the Lord, magnifying the Lord, praising the Lord. It is drawing near to God. You cannot worship if you do not draw near to God. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care how beautiful it may sound. I don't care what a person may feel. If there is no drawing near to God, worship has not taken place. It is responding to God. In worship, We give praise to God, but we also respond to God, and we respond in adoration and action. It is a response to the presence of the Lord. The truth is, worship is so remarkable, so extraordinary, that it is beyond definition. But what we see of this woman serves as one of many blueprints for worship throughout the Word of God. So I want to notice seven things concerning this woman, and some of them are a repeat from this morning, but with the application toward worship. First of all, she had had an experience, a personal experience of Jesus Christ. You cannot worship without that. Due to the response of disgust from Simon the Pharisee concerning this woman and what she did that day, Jesus spoke the parable of the two debtors. And in doing so, as we said this morning, he gave an explanation of the reason for this woman's act toward him. The motivation of her act, the motivation behind her act, was love. And that love had its basis in the fact that she had been forgiven. It had its basis in the fact that she had had a personal saving experience of Jesus Christ. And everything we do is to proceed from this love. And again, this love must have a foundation. And the foundation of this love is a personal experience of Jesus Christ. Now, the Bible teaches in many places that our love for the Lord can grow cold. It can wane. And we all know that by experience. When that happens, it's because we are no longer as aware as we should be of our personal experience with Jesus Christ. Again, that's why it's good to go back there all the time. Her sins have been forgiven. They've been taken away. They've been carried away out of sight. They're no longer placed to her account. They've been removed. And she knows that. She has a personal realization and a keen awareness that she's been delivered, that she's been rescued from the hand of divine justice. She knows, she's very keenly aware that she has been brought out of the pit of sin, that she has been brought out of a life of sin. The Pharisees still identified her as the sinful woman. But the truth is, that lifestyle was already behind her. God's grace had made a difference in her life, and she'd been washed from the filth of her sin, and she'd been set free from that life, set free from the dominion of that life, set free from the bondage of that life. She'd been taken off the broad road that leads to destruction, and she'd been gloriously saved. And all of this was very, very real to her. And that needs to be the case with us. The more aware we are of our personal experience with Christ, the more aware we are of what God has done in our lives by His grace, and the more aware we are of how unworthy we are of all His blessings, the more we live Him. The more we're going to live Him. That is, the more we're going to manifest Him. And the more we will worship Him. So there has to be this personal experience of Jesus Christ. Without that, everything is just formality. Everything is just going through motions. There has to be the living realization. Every one of us, when we walk in these doors, it ought to be fresh upon our minds that we are saved by the grace of God. And we deserve nothing good from the hand of God. Secondly, which we mentioned this morning, she had a longing. She had a longing desire concerning Christ. The more we realize, the more real it is to us that He has saved our soul, the more interest you have in Him, the more desire you have for Him. News had spread that Jesus was in that house. We read in verse 37, when she knew. When she knew. She was in motion toward Him. Soon as she knew, she began to move. Whether in her thoughts or her actions, there began a movement toward that house. That she came to that house, and the manner in which she came reveals that she had a personal interest in Jesus Christ. She had a fascination with Jesus Christ. The fact that she came to that house and the manner in which she came reveals that she was attracted to Him. She had an inclination toward Him. She had a passion and a longing for Him. And when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, whatever else was going on that day, whatever other plans she had for that day, as soon as she knew that Jesus was in that house, she recognized, this is a wonderful opportunity for me. She may have got up that morning, and there may have been many things going on in her life, and she may have had many plans of what she was going to do that day. Perhaps she had her whole day planned out, but when she knew that Jesus was in that house, she thought within herself, what an opportunity I have. What an opportunity I have right now. Again, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, whatever else was going on at that time, what other plans she had for that day, being where Jesus was took priority over everything. Whatever was happening, perhaps something terribly sad happened that day. Perhaps something great happened that day. But whatever it is that was happening that day, being where Jesus was took priority. And that must be the case with worship. Again, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, whatever else was going on, whatever other plans she had, she now had a preference for Jesus Christ. She did not say, "Oh, why did it have to happen today? I've got so much to do today. I've got this plan and this and this, and I've got to go here and I've got to go there. Why couldn't He have come another day?" As soon as she knew, everything else changed. Nothing else really mattered. He had a preference. She had a preference for Christ. Whatever else was going on that day, whatever other plans she had that day, as soon as she knew, she began to expend all of her energy toward Him. And in order to truly worship, there must be an interest in, there must be a desire for God. that takes priority over everything else. Over everything else. And if we are keenly aware every single day when we get up, God save my soul. How can that not take priority? But sometimes we lose sight of what God has done and how unworthy we are. Thirdly, she came prepared to exalt Christ. Again, verse 37, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster box of ointment. It is noted that she brought. That's something you do on purpose. This indicates that she had an intention. It indicates also preparation. She went to that house that day with the intent to do something. With the intent to do something with that alabaster box of ointment. And her intent concerned Jesus Christ. And as soon as she knew that Jesus was there, she began to make preparation for what she was going to do. And coming to that house, her intent and purpose was not to partake of the meal that had been prepared. She didn't hear, there's good food in Simon's house, I'm going to go there. It's not the reason she went. She did not come to meet the host. It's not recorded that she thought that this was a good time to meet Simon. Or to fellowship, or to be in his presence. That's not why she was there. Nor was she there to be with the other guest. Perhaps many of them she knew. She didn't even come to hear Jesus preach a sermon. She didn't know what Jesus was going to do that day. She did not come to make a request of him. Lord, I need this. Lord, would you do that? That's not why she came. She didn't even come to be refreshed by him. Oh, this would be a good time for me to receive spiritual refreshment. Though she did receive spiritual refreshment. But that's not why she came. She did not come because it was the popular thing to do. She came to worship Christ. And she came out of love for Him. She did not go into that house with a spirit of dread, even though she knew there were many Pharisees there. She had an interest in Jesus Christ. She had an attraction for Jesus Christ. She had a desire to be where He was. And the fact that she brought an alabaster box of ointment reveals something we need to learn. Her heart was greatly stirred and affected by Christ before she even arrived at the house. This is a real problem today. Because many come in to the house of God, unstirred, unaffected, and they expect the song service or the preaching service to stir them. And the song service and the preaching service ought to stir us.
But think, if we came in stirred and affected by God, I believe that would stir and affect the song and preaching service. We've got it backwards today. People come in the house of God to be stirred. We ought to come in already stirred. And that's what she did. If we would come into the house of worship already stirred, already affected by the Lord, there's no one coming in moping. It doesn't matter what happened the rest of the day. If we come in stirred and affected by the Lord, we don't come in moping. We come in with joy. We need to come into the house of God stirred and affected. And I believe if we come in stirred and affected, we'll go out even more stirred and affected. So she came already stirred, already affected by the Lord, with the intent and with the purpose to do what? To worship Him. When she heard, or when she knew, that Jesus was in that house, her heart began to be stirred. And this is the place where God meets with His people. And the very thought that Wednesday's coming, that Sunday's coming, ought to stir our hearts and ought to affect our hearts. And whatever happened earlier in the day should not unstir our hearts. People are far too affected by the circumstances of the day. And circumstances in the world in which we live are pretty bad. And so people come into the house of God all the time unstirred and just kind of sit back and wait for the song service to stir them or wait for the preaching to stir them. You can't stir something that's dead. It's a waste of time. So we need, if we're going to worship, we have to be stirred before we worship. We have to be affected by God before we worship. Fourthly, she was of a different spirit than those that were in that house that day. Jesus, in making application of the parable to Simon, draws a sharp contrast between this woman and Simon. Notice verse 44, the words, thou. I entered into thine house, thou. And then read, skip a few words and then read, but she. Thou, but she. Then in verse 45, the very first word of verse 45, thou. Skip a few words, but this woman. Thou, but this woman. Verse 46, about the fifth word, again we see thou. Skip a few words, but this. He's drawing a contrast between Simon, and no doubt Simon's guest as well. He's drawing a contrast between Simon and this woman. Now, Simon and those that were in the house that day were oblivious. They were ignorant of what was right in front of them. Jesus. And they were oblivious. Simon and his guest, we can assume that most of them were Pharisees, perhaps not all. But they were proud. And they were self-righteous. That's revealed in Simon's thought process. Because of this, Simon and his guest did not show common courtesy to Jesus Christ. Notice verse 44. He turned to the woman and said unto Simon, seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet. That was just a common courtesy of the day. But she. So they didn't show common courtesy. Simon and his guests did not show affection for Jesus Christ. Verse 45, "Thou gavest me no kiss." There was no affection shown. None whatsoever. Verse 46, they gave no special attention to Christ. They gave no special honor to Christ. "My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman." She did all the things that they didn't do. There in verses 44 through 46. Simon and his guests, their intentions were all wrong. But this woman, she possessed a different spirit. And you know what may be even more amazing than the fact that she possessed a different spirit was that she maintained a different spirit amongst them. That's a miracle in itself. We see also the Pharisees, they were there to find fault. They found fault with the woman, and they found fault with Christ. If he were a prophet, he would have known. He wouldn't allow her to touch him. I wouldn't allow her to touch me. And he claims to be Christ, and he's allowing this sinner to touch him. They're there to find fault. They're there to be critical. And the Pharisee spirit in all of us needs to be broken. If we're going to worship God, the Pharisee spirit in all of us needs to be broken. We all can find fault if we're looking for it. You go into a building filled with sinners, there's a lot of fault there. There's plenty of fault. You go into a church building, I don't care what church it is, there's hypocrisy to be found. And you can sit back and you can find fault. You can be critical, but you haven't worshipped. You haven't worshipped. Those who leave the house of God and complain about everybody there, they didn't worship at all. Not one bit. So she came to this house already stirred, already affected by the Lord. Her intent and purpose is to worship Him. And she did not let the ones that were present in that house bring her down to their level. We got to guard against that. Because there will always be people who are of that Pharisaical spirit and who have a very low spiritual level. Don't let them drag you down there. You come and you worship the Lord. Fifthly, and we saw this morning, she was completely focused upon Christ. When that woman headed to the house of Simon the Pharisee that day, she knew that in that house were those who hated her. In that house were those who condemned her and shunned her. And though she knew that, and though she knew that when she entered that house, there she would get some dirty looks and probably some critical words cast in her direction, she went there anyway. And she went there uninhibited by what the others would think, what the others would say. Why did she do that? Because Jesus was there, and that's all that mattered. Jesus was her focus. Jesus was her priority. Again, in verse 39, we're told the thoughts of Simon. But this woman didn't focus upon the Pharisees that were sitting at that table, the ones that perhaps were standing along the walls. One thing was on her mind: the Lord. The Lord. The devil does everything he can to divert our attention from the Lord before we get here. And if you walk in that door and your attention is on the Lord, he's going to do everything he can to divert your attention when you're in here. It's the way he operates. It could be something somebody does that just angers you. You better get that right, because if you don't, you're not worshiping. You're not worshiping. Somebody does something that just bugs you and you just can't let it go. You find fault. And then pretty soon, before long, you've found 15 other faults. You need to stop right where you are and get right. Perhaps somebody doesn't treat you the way you think you should be treated. What'd you come for? What'd you come for? To be treated respectfully or to worship? We hope and pray that everybody treats others respectfully. It doesn't always happen that way. What if this were the only place? What if everyone in the building hated you? That's pretty much how it was at this house. And judged you and was critical of you. But this was the only place where Jesus was. Would you come? Would you come? I'm not going there. Those people don't like me. That wasn't her focus. That wasn't her focus. She was there to worship the Lord. So we need to ask ourselves many times when we come into the house of God, what is it that we see? What is it that we see? I don't even believe she even saw the Pharisees. I mean, she was so focused upon Christ. It was like they weren't even there. She didn't get sidetracked. Sixthly, she drew near to Christ. Verse 38, she stood at his feet. She's near to him. She's taken her proper place. And as she stood there, again, as we said this morning, we don't know how long she stood there. She may have stood there 30 seconds. She may have stood there 20 minutes. I don't know. But I do know this, that as she stood there, there was a deeper uniting of heart with him. She was just loving him more and more and more. And as she stood there, she became more and more aware, I'm blessed. He's blessed me. She just became more and more aware of these things. She stood there at his feet. She became more and more aware of her unworthiness. More and more aware of his grace and his mercy. And without pride, without self-sufficiency, but simply as a vessel of mercy, she did what she did. In verse 38. I don't believe there was pride in her act. What she's doing in verse 38 is simply because she realizes I'm a vessel of mercy. What she did was not contrived. It was not coerced. It was not forced. And it was not detached from the emotion that was bubbling over in her soul. She felt a passion for Christ. And standing there and feeling that emotion, she never ever tried to subdue it. She didn't try to subdue that emotion that she was feeling. All that Baptists would learn that lesson. Oh, that I would learn that lesson, that each one of us would learn that lesson. The emotions that she was feeling were God-given. They were God-produced. And they were God-honoring emotions. And she didn't try to subdue them. And she knew that she was going to meet with criticism. In our day, people tend to think sometimes, well, I don't want to get too emotional. I got to subdue that because what would people think? Does it really matter? When we're talking about worshiping the Lord. You see, we have confused God-given, God-produced, and God-honoring motions with emotionalism. We've confused the two. We make them the same. And they're anything but. Emotionalism in worship is when the goal is the display of motions. If she would have went to that house and said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and I'm going to stand at his feet and I'm going to stand there and I'm going to weep and then I'm going to get down and I'm going to wash his feet. If she had planned all that out, that would be emotionalism. Emotionalism in worship is when emotions are stressed for the sake of emotion. It's when emotion becomes the basis for faith. In combating emotionalism, Baptists have become submerged in formalism. I have never in my ministry yet heard the accusation hurled at any Baptist church. They're guilty of emotionalism. I've never heard it. Never. I don't think I ever will. Because in our effort to combat emotionalism, we've gone way too far the other way. Formalism is the lack of emotion, the lack of passion. It is the actual removal of the heart and emotion from worship. When you remove the heart from worship, you cease to worship. Worship is the overflow of a grateful heart under the sense of God's favor. So the very word, the very meaning of worship requires emotion. It requires it. Worship is the outpouring of a soul at peace, the presence of God. Think of that woman standing there at the feet of Jesus, and she feels a peace in her soul, a peace that at one time was not there, and she becomes overcome with this emotion. So let us make no mistake about it. Worship is not separate from God-given, God-produced, God-honoring emotions. I'll be honest with you. There have been many times in my saved life where I have felt just overwhelmed and could have run laps around the building for the goodness of God. But I sit there and say, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's wrong. It really is. I'm not saying we should get up and run laps around the building. But it might not hurt. We do need to learn not to subdue a God-produced emotion. And I guarantee you that in most Baptist churches, if you show a God-produced emotion, you're going to get criticized. How many remember when Brother Hancock first came on the scene? Everybody thought, that man's crazy. And by some, he was criticized. But he showed emotion in his worship. There's nothing wrong with that. It's wrong to go the other way, and I pray God would forgive me. Because many times I have gone the other way. But she worshiped. And it was an emotional experience. Now, you can have an emotional experience and it not be worship. But really, all worship, there's an emotional experience involved. And there she is, washing, wiping with her hair, his feet, kissing his feet. And can any of us think for a moment that she did that in coldness? That she did that with a spirit of indifference? Well, I don't think so. Do you think that she did those things with a sense of detachment from Christ? No. She experienced emotion. Seventhly and lastly, she experienced further blessing from Christ. Notice verse 44. And he turned to the woman. So she's standing, it said, that she's standing at his feet behind him. He turns to her, so he's now facing her. Again, and I believe when he faced her, it's not recorded what she felt then, but I believe the emotion might have even been greater than when she stood at his feet behind him. When he turned to her. And he spoke as he's looking at this woman. He spoke to Simon. So he's nearby, no doubt. Seest thou this woman? Christ is saying, I see her. Do you see her? Do you see her? Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house, not her house, your house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet. And he goes on, and we've already read those verses. Notice verse 48. And he said unto her. So now he has ceased speaking to Simon. And he's speaking directly to her. What a thrill. Amen. When God speaks directly to us. And what he said was, thy sins are forgiven. Thy sins. He's given her assurance here. Your sins are forgiven. Immediately they began to have critical thoughts. That's recorded in verse 49. And then he said something else to the woman. Thy faith hath saved thee. He recognized her faith. But then what he said to that woman, he said, go in peace. And I believe she was emotional all the way home. And she rejoiced all the way home. She came into that house that night feeling I've been blessed by Him. And all I want to do is worship Him. And she went away from that house that night saying, oh, I've been blessed by Him. That's how we ought to come in. That's how we ought to go out. I've been blessed. I've been blessed by Him. I've been blessed because of Him. Again, may we truly be a people of worship. I believe, I preached a series on it, Can We Really Worship? Because of the days in which we live, we can, but it's difficult. It really is. But the truth is this. If we are going to be a people of true worship, one of the first things we have to do is be honest about the way we worship now. And do some repenting the way sometimes we come into the building, the way we go out. So we need to be honest. We need to ask God, help us. Lord, help us to worship. You think about the first night of conference. I mean, you could just about, when Brother Larry stands up here and leads that first congregational song, you could just about fly away to heaven right then. And you know what? I don't think it's because there's more people. That's not why. That's not the main reason. I mean, there's just so much joy. It's because people have come. Ourselves and others, they've come and they're excited and they sing out and everyone's excited. That's how it ought to be all the time, whether it's a church of 6 people, a church of 20, a church of 100. We ought to come with one purpose. I'm going to worship the Lord. Somebody may say something to me today. This is all of us talking. But I'm not going to let it bother me, whatever they say. I'm here to worship the Lord. And whatever they say, I'm not going to let it bother me when I go home. I've come to worship the Lord. I haven't come to listen to what everybody else says. And we all need that attitude. I'm not going to let anybody pull me down. And even more importantly, I'm not going to pull anyone else down. But again, that ought to be our desire when we come into the house of God. I've come to worship. And people that come to worship, and you all are great, because I'm becoming more and more long-winded all the time. People that come to worship do not concern themselves with time. They don't. We do need to be conscious sometime of time because people only have so much attention span. But again, may we be a people that worship. That would be our desire every time we come to the house of God. And that we would encourage one another to worship. It breaks my heart when I see parents entertaining children in church. You're teaching them a habit you're not going to break. I'm not talking about the habit of playing. I'm talking about the habit of not paying attention and not being serious in the house of God. Well, I just do it when they're little. They can sit. They can learn to sit still. They can watch, they can sit in front of that television set for hours. They can sit and learn to be still and listen. I realize I can't worship until the Lord saves them. I realize that. But we must be careful that we don't teach them bad habits. That we don't teach them bad habits. So God help us to be a people of worship. I believe everyone here desires to be that kind of people. People that worship. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in song.